Chapter 98. Depression. As soon as I could recover my presence of mind, which quite deserted me in the first overpowering shock of my aunt's intelligence, I proposed to Mr. Dick to come round to the chandler's shop and take possession of the bed which Mr. Peggotty had lately vacated. The chandler's shop being in Hungerford Market, and Hungerford Market being a very different place in those days, there was a low wooden colonnade before the door, not very unlike that before the house where the little man and woman used to live, in the old weather glass, which pleased Mr. Dick mightily. The glory of lodging over this structure would have compensated him, I dare say, for many inconveniences. But, as there were really few to bear, beyond the compound of flavors I have already mentioned, and perhaps the want of a little more elbow room, he was perfectly charmed with his accommodation. Mrs. Krupp had indignantly assured him that there wasn't room to swing a cat there. But, as Mr. Dick justly observed to me, sitting down on the foot of the bed, nursing his leg, you know, Trotwood, I don't want to swing a cat. I never do swing a cat. Therefore, what does that signify to me? I tried to ascertain whether Mr. Dick had any understanding of the causes of this sudden and great change in my aunt's affairs. As I might have expected, he had none at all. The only account he could give of it was that my aunt had said to him the day before yesterday, "Now, Dick, are you really and truly the philosopher I take you for?" That then he had said, "Yes, he hoped so." That then my aunt had said, "Dick, I am ruined." That then he had said, "Oh, indeed." That then my aunt had praised him highly, which he was glad of. And that then they had come to me, and had a bottled porter and sandwiches on the road. Mr. Dick was so very complacent, sitting on the foot of the bed, nursing his leg, and telling me this, with his eyes wide open and a surprised smile, that I am sorry to say I was provoked into explaining to him that ruin meant distress, want, and starvation. But I was soon bitterly reproved for this harshness, by seeing his face turn pale, and tears course down his lengthened cheeks, while he fixed upon me a look of such unutterable woe, that it might have softened a far harder heart than mine. I took infinitely greater pains to cheer him up again than I had taken to depress him, and I soon understood, as I ought to have known at first, that he had been so confident, merely because of his faith in the wisest and most wonderful of women, and his unbounded reliance on my intellectual resources. The latter, I believe, he considered a match for any kind of disaster not absolutely mortal. What can we do, Trotwood? Said Mr. Dick. There's the memorial, to be sure there is, said one. But all we can do just now, Mr. Dick, is to keep a cheerful countenance, and not let my aunt see that we are thinking about it. He assented to this in the most earnest manner, and implored me, if I should see him wandering an inch out of the right course, to recall him by some of those superior methods which were always at my command. But I regret to state that the fright I had given him proved too much for his best attempts at concealment. All the evening his eyes wandered to my aunt's face, with an expression of the most dismal apprehension, as if he saw her growing thin on the spot. He was conscious of this, and put a constraint upon his head. But his keeping that immovable, and sitting rolling his eyes like a piece of machinery, did not mend the matter at all. I saw him look at the loaf at supper, which happened to be a small one, as if nothing else stood between us and famine, and when my aunt insisted on his making his customary repast, I detected him in the act of pocketing fragments of his bread and cheese, I have no doubt for the purpose of reviving us with those savings, when we should have reached an advanced stage of attenuation. My aunt, on the other hand, was in a composed frame of mind, which was a lesson to all of us, to me, I am sure. She was extremely gracious to Peggotty, except when I inadvertently called her by that name, and, strange as I knew she felt in London, appeared quite at home. She was to have my bed, and I was to lie in the sitting room, to keep guard over her. She made a great point of being so near the river, in case of a conflagration, and I suppose really did find some satisfaction in that circumstance. Trot, my dear, apostrophe said my aunt, when she saw me making preparations for compounding her usual night draught, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing, aunt. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not wine, my dear. Ale. Apostrophe, but there is wine here, aunt. And you always have it made of wine. Apostrophe, keep that, in case of sickness, apostrophe said my aunt. We mustn't use it carelessly, Trot. Ale for me. Half a pint. Apostrophe, I thought Mr. Dick would have fallen, insensible. My aunt being resolute, I went out, and got the ale myself. As it was growing late, Peggotty and Mr. Dick took that opportunity of repairing to the chandler's shop together. I parted from him, poor fellow, at the corner of the street, with his great kite at his back, a very monument of human misery. My aunt was walking up and down the room when I returned, crimping the borders of her nightcap with her fingers. I warmed the ale, and made the toast on the usual infallible principles. When it was ready for her, she was ready for it, with her nightcap on, and the skirt of her gown turned back on her knees. My dear, apostrophe said my aunt, after taking a spoonful of it, it's a great deal better than wine. Not half so bilious. Apostrophe, I suppose I look doubtful, for she added. Tut, tut, child. If nothing worse than ale happens to us, we are well off. Apostrophe, I should think so myself, aunt, I am sure, apostrophe said one. Well then, why don't you think so? Apostrophe, apostrophe said my aunt. Because you and I are very different people, apostrophe I returned. Stuff and nonsense, Trot. Apostrophe, apostrophe replied my aunt. My aunt went on with a quiet enjoyment, in which there was very little affectation, if any, drinking the warm ale with a teaspoon, and soaking her strips of toast in it. Trot, apostrophe said she, I don't care for strange faces in general, but I rather like that Barkis of yours, do you know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's better than £100, to hear you say so. Apostrophe, apostrophe said one. It's a most extraordinary world, apostrophe observed my aunt, rubbing her nose. How that woman ever got into it with that name, is unaccountable to me. It would be much more easy to be born a Jackson, or something of that sort, one would think. Apostrophe, perhaps she thinks so too. It's not her fault, apostrophe said one. I suppose not, apostrophe returned my aunt, rather grudging the admission. But it's very aggravating. However, she's Barkis now. That's some comfort. Barkis is uncommonly fond of you, Trot. Apostrophe, there is nothing she would leave undone to prove it, apostrophe said one. Nothing, I believe, apostrophe returned my aunt. Here, the poor fool has been begging and praying about handing over some of her money, because she has got too much of it. A simpleton. Apostrophe, my aunt's tears of pleasure were positively trickling down into the warm ale. She's the most ridiculous creature that ever was born, apostrophe said my aunt. I knew, from the first moment, when I saw her with that poor dear blessed baby of a mother of yours, that she was the most ridiculous of mortals. But there are good points in Barkis. Apostrophe, affecting to laugh, she got an opportunity of putting her hand to her eyes. Having availed herself of it, she resumed her toast and her discourse together. Ah! Mercy upon us! Apostrophe sighed my aunt. I know all about it, Trot. Barkis and myself had quite a gossip while you were out with Dick. I know all about it. I don't know where these wretched girls expect to go to, for my part. I wonder they don't knock out their brains against mantelpieces, apostrophe said my aunt. An idea which was probably suggested to her by her contemplation of mine. Poor Emily! Apostrophe, apostrophe said one. Oh, don't talk to me about poor, apostrophe returned my aunt. She should have thought of that before she caused so much misery. Give me a kiss, Trot. I am sorry for your early experience. Apostrophe, as I bent forward, she put her tumbler on my knee to detain me, and said, Oh, Trot, Trot. And so you fancy yourself in love. Do you? Apostrophe, fancy, and. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I exclaimed, as red as I could be. I adore her with my whole soul. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Dora, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned my aunt. And you mean to say the little thing is very fascinating, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear aunt, apostrophe, I replied. No one can form the least idea what she is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah. And not silly? Apostrophe, said my aunt. Silly, aunt. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I seriously believe it had never once entered my head for a single moment to consider whether she was or not. I resented the idea, of course, but I was in a manner struck by it as a new one altogether. Not lightheaded? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said my aunt. Lightheaded, aunt. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I could only repeat this daring speculation with the same kind of feeling with which I had repeated the preceding question. Well, well, apostrophe, apostrophe, said my aunt. I only ask. I don't depreciate her. Poor little couple. And so you think you were formed for one another, and are to go through a party supper table kind of life, like two pretty pieces of confectionery, do you, Trot? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she asked me this so kindly, and with such a gentle air, half playful and half sorrowful, that I was quite touched. We are young and inexperienced, and, I know, apostrophe, I replied, and I dare say we say and think a good deal that is rather foolish. But we love one another truly, I am sure. If I thought Dora could ever love anybody else, or cease to love me, or that I could ever love anybody else, or cease to love her, I don't know what I should do. Go out of my mind, I think. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, Trot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said my aunt, shaking her head, and smiling gravely. Blind, blind, blind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, someone that I know, Trot. Apostrophe, my aunt pursued, after a pause, though of a very pliant disposition, has an earnestness of affection in him that reminds me of poor baby. Earnestness is what, that somebody must look for, to sustain him and improve him, Trot. Deep, downright, faithful earnestness. Apostrophe, if you only knew the earnestness of Dora, and. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cried. Oh, Trot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said again. Blind, blind. Apostrophe, and without knowing why, I felt a vague unhappy loss or want of something overshadow me like a cloud. However, apostrophe, said my aunt, I don't want to put two young creatures out of conceit with themselves, or to make them unhappy. So, though it is a girl and boy attachment, and girl and boy attachments very often mind, I don't say always, come to nothing, still we'll be serious about it, and hope for a prosperous issue one of these days. There's time enough for it to come to anything. Apostrophe, this was not upon the whole very comforting to a rapturous lover, but I was glad to have my aunt in my confidence, and I was mindful of her being fatigued. So I thanked her ardently for this mark of her affection, and for all her other kindnesses towards me, and after a tender good night, she took her nightcap into my bedroom. How miserable I was when I lay down. How I thought and thought about my being poor, in Mr. Spenlow's eyes, about my not being what I thought I was when I proposed to Dora, about the chivalrous necessity of telling Dora what my worldly condition was, and releasing her from her engagement, if she thought fit, about how I should contrive to live, during the long term of my articles, when I was earning nothing, about doing something to assist my aunt, and seeing no way of doing anything, about coming down to have no money in my pocket, and to wear a shabby coat, and to be able to carry Dora no little presents, and to ride no gallant grays, and to show myself in no agreeable light. sordid and selfish as I knew it was, and as I tortured myself, by knowing that it was, to let my mind run on my own distress so much, I was so devoted to Dora, that I could not help it. I knew that it was base in me, not to think more of my aunt, and less of myself. But, so far, selfishness was inseparable from Dora, and I could not put Dora on one side for any mortal creature. How exceedingly miserable I was, that night. As to sleep, I had dreams of poverty in all sorts of shapes, but I seemed to dream without the previous ceremony of going to sleep. Now I was ragged, wanting to sell Dora matches, 6 bundles for a halfpenny. Now I was at the office in a nightgown and boots, remonstrated with by Mr. Spenlow on appearing before the clients in that airy attire. Now I was hungrily picking up the crumbs that fell from old Tiffy's daily biscuit, regularly eaten when St. Paul's struck one. Now I was hopelessly endeavoring to get a license to marry Dora, having nothing but one of Uriah Heep's gloves to offer in exchange, which the whole commons rejected. And still, more or less conscious of my own room, I was always tossing about like a distressed ship in a sea of bedclothes. My aunt was restless too, for I frequently heard her walking to and fro. 2 or 3 times in the course of the night, attired in a long flannel wrapper in which she looked 7 feet high, she appeared, like a disturbed ghost, in my room, and came to the side of the sofa on which I lay. On the first occasion I started up in alarm, to learn that she inferred from a particular light in the sky, that Westminster Abbey was on fire, and to be consulted in reference to the probability of its igniting Buckingham Street, in case the wind changed. Lying still, after that, I found that she sat down near me, whispering to herself, "Poor boy!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, and then it made me 20 times more wretched. To know how unselfishly mindful she was of me, and how selfishly mindful I was of myself. It was difficult to believe that a night so long to me could be short to anybody else. This consideration set me thinking and thinking of an imaginary party, where people were dancing the hours away, until that became a dream too, and I heard the music incessantly playing one tune, and saw Dora incessantly dancing one dance, without taking the least notice of me. The man who had been playing the harp all night, was trying in vain to cover it with an ordinary sized nightcap, when I awoke. Or I should rather say, when I left off trying to go to sleep, and saw the sun shining in through the window at last. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.